It's time for the Cheap and Chad's Power Half Hour.
Welcome one, welcome all, and yes, welcome back to the best and only podcast that features our league of record. Chief, how you doing tonight?
Doing all right, Chaz. We are 1 week away from the NBA season opening, which means my life is going to get really hectic. Well, actually, it already is. The amount of things I have to write between now and next week and then the Wolves home opener next Sunday is staggering in volume. So this is probably the last free night I'm going to have for a while. So enjoy this one while it lasts.
Okay. All right. Well, then I guess we'll have to have some special guests on. Moving forward, I'm sure nobody will be opposed to that.
No, that'd be fine. And you never know, maybe I'll sneak on. You know, I am going to be in Charlotte next Thursday and Friday. So,
oh, that's true.
You know, potential maybe a dual podcast appearance between me and Joe Mancuso, but we'll see.
You mean O'Brien?
No, I'm going to be in Charlotte next
week. Oh, you're in Charlotte next week. Sorry. Okay.
I'm in Charlotte next week. Yeah, no, I'm in Milwaukee tomorrow.
Oh, right.
When
okay.
When most people will be hearing this, I'll be in Milwaukee by then. But
cool.
Yeah, no, the Wolves play in Charlotte next week. So.
Gotcha. Oh, that'd be fun. Maybe you and Mancuso. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
All right, so I mean, it's been a couple of weeks, right? And to everyone that listens to this religiously, we do apologize. You know, life gets in the way. Obviously, you know, I've had my fair of things happen, and as of you, so you know, we definitely appreciate you guys sticking with us, even though we're delayed. But you know, it's been I think about 3 weeks since we released one. So you suggested that rather than go over like you know week to week matchups, we just talk about kind of where we are now, halfway through the season, which we are, right? We've 6 weeks.
Yeah,
it's a 13 week season, so we're basically effectively halfway through the year. So let's talk about where things stand. So, I mean, what are some things that really stand out to you? Or do you want me to go first?
You can go first.
Okay.
I'll let you go first.
So, I think what's for me, that there's two things that really are stand out. Number one is the fact that I'm 6-0. I had no belief that that would ever happen. And obviously, my fantasy defense has been phenomenal, and that's really the main cause, right, is that I basically have faced the lowest score or second lowest score basically every week. So I really just had to put up anything, and I would be 6-0. So I'm sure that most people, almost everyone facing my schedule, would have a similar 4-2, 5-1, 6-0 type of year. So that's just the way that things are broken for me so far. It doesn't mean that'll continue to happen. I think the other thing for me is that, you know, when Mancuso did the divisions, I think we circled our division and said, you know, we're going to be the toughest division. And that's just not the way it's worked out. And obviously part of that's because of some of your bad luck and some of Gelch's bad luck.
I wouldn't say bad luck. I just drafted a bad team.
Okay.
Gelch has had bad luck.
Gelch has had bad luck. Okay, fair.
I just drafted poorly.
I don't think you drafted that poorly. I think it's just the way things are broke, right?
Well, I didn't catch a break in week two when I didn't start Raheem Mostert, so I was 0-2 instead of 1-1. And then the next week Saquon gets hurt, and I waste Evans's 45-point game because Saquon got hurt.
Yep.
And I was up against like Cat and McCaffrey, so a chance to go 2-1. Now I'm 0-3. And then Saquon's hurt, and it's just, you know, it's just snowballs from there. And, you know, so, yes, there was a little bit of bad luck, but also my team sucked. So.
Okay, all right, I'll give you that. I think the other thing for me is, so the thing that I was kind of alluding to is that the way the divisions are set up right now, you know, obviously in our division, it's me and Mancuso, our clear front runners. Gelch has a lot of work to make up. I think for you at this point, unless you go on a 7-6 run, and I and Joe
happen.
And Gelch completely tank. So
not gonna happen.
Yeah.
I mean,
low percentage.
I was kind of hopeful for a win this week, but then I ran into the top scorer. So yay!
Yeah, only top scorer by half a point though. He only beat me by half a point. So I was close.
Well, I mean,
to
still I scored like 120.
You
and
did.
So
I know. And again, yeah, you ran up that buzzsaw, right? But then, you know, and then I look at structural purists, and you basically have wins all over there except for Tim. And then you have the Cheeto Fingers Anonymous, which is everyone there is 500 or better. So when I'm looking at this, really what this tells me is that basically most people's wins have come at the expense of Tim, you, or Gelch, right? So as we move into this back half of the season, where those last where next week and then the last 3 weeks of the season, so four out of the next seven games are interdivisional, I think we're going to start to see a lot of separation because no longer can they beat up on Tim and you and Gelch. Obviously, between you and Gelch, someone's going to win next week. Or no, sorry, between you and Joe, someone's going to win.
Week eight.
Right. And then, you know, with Tim, you know, he has a shot at getting a win. So it's just, I think things will start to, with four of the next seven games being interdivisional, I think things will start to separate and you'll really start to see. So it's a question of, you know, in structural purists, it can be Goop, it can be Rachel, it can be Mike. Any of them can emerge. And it's really the same with Cheeto Fingers division. Obviously, Cat's got the lead at 5-1, but Jake's team is a decent team. And if Saquon comes back, all of a sudden, you know, he's a strong contender. So he's got ground to make up, but anybody can emerge from that division. Anybody can emerge from structural purists. I think you're probably going to end up with two playoff teams from our division and me and Joe, just based on how Joe's been scoring and the fact that I'm already two games ahead of everybody. I would have to have a really bad stumble to not make playoffs even at this point.
Yeah. I don't see that happening. It's interesting to think about. Eight teams are 3-3 or better currently, and only four teams are below 500. I feel like this year, maybe more than in the past few years, in the past 2 years, I think at least, I don't see a clear cut title favorite right now.
I think it's Mancuso, but okay.
What's that?
I think it's Mancuso, but okay.
I don't think so. No, I don't. I thought so before the Chubb trade. I don't think so now.
Really?
No, I don't. Like I said, I think I just don't know. I just did not like that trade for him. He traded the number one receiver right now. Chris Godwin is the number one scoring receiver.
I don't know
what he really gained out of that trade, but I don't know. I think right now, if I had to pick a title favorite right now, for me, it would be Joe O'Brien.
Yeah.
Yes. But I mean, so we're kind of in that position where we were last year, which is Joe O'Brien might have the best team, but you know, is it going to hold up in the playoffs? But honestly, like, I feel like any one of the top, like you, Joe, and Kat, to me are the clear top four. But any one of you could take out the other one on a given week. I don't feel like there's a lot of separation between you four, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, I guess so. I think for me with Kat, obviously she's been bolstered significantly by CMC. And when you look at the stats, right, she's had the fourth or fifth most points scored against her, right, at 684, right? I'm at 524. Mm-hmm. So literally, there's six games divided by 160. So I've literally had almost 20, 25 points a game less than Kat scored against me. She's at 728. I'm at 705. So I'm scoring nearly the same clip as her, but most of her production is coming from Christian McCaffrey, right? As evidenced by that second week where he didn't score, right? Scored 5 points, and that's the week that she faced me. Just happened to be that way. And I got that win. So I feel like if McCaffrey's production dips at all, which no reason to think it would, but to be fair, the whole Kyle Allen, Cam Newton situation where, you know, Allen had that really great first week, and they're like, oh no, Cam Newton's going to take as much time as he wants to get back, and then Kyle Allen has dipped, and now they can't wait to get Cam Newton back. It's entirely possible that Kat loses the majority of her games in this back half because she's not capable of scoring. And again, past performance is no predictor of future performance, right? I mean, in terms of points scored against her or points that she's going to score. But if she did not have McCaffrey, right? I mean, she's right now number one. She's number two in scoring behind Mancuso. But Mancuso's had 60 points less scored against him. So like if she was more average in terms of scoring, she would be 3-3.
But I mean, but see, the thing, it's hard to eliminate somebody like that from somebody's lineup because that's the reason why you draft somebody like
no,
that.
No, yeah, you're absolutely right. It's fair. It's just, you know, I have our team pulled up and I'm looking at it. I'm going, okay, the move for Kyler Murray was a good move. Frank Gore is just like, blah. I mean, he right. maybe gets like 6 points a game, but then
Kat does not have a lot of depth on her team.
Yeah. And she's got the number one receiver in Cooper Kupp. She's got a solid receiver in Thielen. She obviously picked up Jamal Williams, which was a smart move. And Gallup's been able to be productive, but like she has nothing else. And so it's just, it's one of those things where now that we're getting into the meat of the bye weeks, I want to see how her team's going to be able to hold up.
That's fair.
With Joe's team, with both Joe's teams, with my team, I'm much more confident
have more depth, yeah.
that we're going to be capable of getting
through bye weeks. But the thing is, in the playoffs,
won't matter.
I mean, she's already 5-1, but there's no bye weeks in the playoffs, so she'll still be at full strength in the playoffs, you know, presuming no injuries. But yeah, so, you know, as long as that team stays healthy, it's a competitive team, and she's already got 5 wins. She only needs 3 more, basically, to lock up a playoff spot, so she goes 3-4 the rest of the season. She's good.
Yeah, that's true. She does face, McCaffrey does face San Francisco, at San Francisco, coming off his bye week. So these next 2 weeks are going to be tough for her, I think.
Yeah, we'll see.
Although great playoff schedule. Washington, sure, Atlanta, Seattle. Sure
she's playing. Yeah, that's ideal.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, you know,
I don't think you can get a much better playoff schedule.
Yeah, I mean, one of the reasons why I liked Carson's schedule, I already said this in the chat, over Zeke's was because of the playoff schedule. You know, Carson, even though they're in the West, they play San Francisco twice, but one of those games is Week 17. So I don't have to worry about it.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's got they face the Rams, which are soft. Carolina's run defense has not been the best. Their pass defense has been good. And then they face Arizona. So I think that a slight downtick from CMC's schedule, but Carson's schedule also sets up pretty nicely. Although he does he's a tough 3-week stretch where he faces San Francisco, bye week, and then Philly, and then many. So he's actually got a 3-4 week stretch there. But I have other pieces of my team that were based on how matchups are going. I don't necessarily need him, but we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, I like Carson. I mean, I was, you know, not. I was charging you a lot to you know, in that trade to get rid of him. he's solid. I don't know. I like Zeke, so that's why I pulled the trigger on that trade. A lot of fond memories of our almost title in 2016 when he almost single-handedly won the title for me that week.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I'm a big Zeke fan, right? I've owned him 3 of the past 4 years, and now you've owned him like 2. All have owned him 2.5 of 3-4 years, and you'll have owned him like 1.5 of 4 years, right? I mean,
yeah,
that's how it'll break down. So I like Zeke. Obviously, if he was performing at the level that, you know, I was hoping he'd be performing at, I would never have moved him. But in the end, because of some depth issues, I felt like I needed to make that trade. And obviously, it bit me in the butt this past week. But, look, at the end of the day, if Curtis Samuel and McLaurin end up being, you know, top 15 wide receivers the rest of the way, then I probably lose out in the trade unless Evans and Green are higher.
Right.
But at least my faith in them will be renewed, and my reasons for liking those guys and going heavy after McLaurin in the free agency and grabbing Samuel from the draft will have been justified. But hopefully,
no, absolutely.
When we play each other, they don't kick my ass.
We'll see. Well, by that time, you'll be well in the playoffs. I think you'll be fine. What's interesting is, you know, one of the things I wanted to touch on was just looking at like the scoring leaders through 6 weeks. I think, you look at the running back scoring leaders and there's some familiar names around the top 10, Kamara, Fournette, Zeke, David Johnson, Chubb, Dalvin Cook, McCaffrey. I think in a lot of ways, Carson's also kind of on the edge there. I think in a lot of ways, the running back top scorers have more or less gone as you might expect them from the beginning of the season. There's outside of maybe Austin Eckler, but now that Melvin Gordon's back, you know, that's gonna jump back down. There's not a lot of guys that are surprises at the top of the running back scoring leaders, but when you get to the receivers, mm-hmm. what a year it's been, like, just overall receiving wise. Chris Godwin is, I'm just looking at our league scoring leaders right now, so this is obviously half point PPR, but like, let's go down the list here. Chris Godwin number one. Obviously there's been some bye weeks in here as well, but Chris Godwin number one, Michael Thomas number two, that's not really a surprise. Cooper Kupp number three,
bit of a surprise.
DJ Chark number four,
huge surprise.
Amari Cooper number five, but now he's hurt. Keenan Allen number six, not really a surprise. Julio Jones number seven, not really a surprise. Adam Thielen, number eight. Again, another strong start for Thielen. Let's see if he keeps it up. Evans at nine. McLaurin at 10. Cortland Sutton, 11. Tyler Lockett, 12. Will Fuller, 13. Julian Edelman, 14. Diggs, 15. Hopkins, 16. Odell is all the way down at, like, 21. Like, so there's, and, like, you know, Robert Woods is in the 20s. You know, there's some guys who were projected to be a lot higher, I think, than they were, and they were drafted as such because receivers are perceived to be the safe bets, right?
Yep.
But this year, there's been a little bit of a shakeup, at least in terms of the receiver. Now, this could level out and things could change as the year goes on, but I'm just fascinated by kind of the turnover at the top of the receiver scoring list.
Yeah, I think that's a valid argument. So one of the things I did was I looked at when I pull up the average, right? Because the average tells you by the game, so it's a little bit that way. From the ranking standpoint, it's a little more realistic. It's almost the same, right? Godwin's number one, Thomas is two, Kupp is three. McLaurin actually jumps to four because he missed a game.
He missed that game. That's true.
And he had bye weeks. When you count those games out, he's actually number four. Cooper's still at five. Chark's at six. What's crazy is that DeSean Jackson is at seven, but again, he's only played like two games.
Yeah,
you have to take these with a grain of salt. But you start to see some separation. You know, Kenny Galladay is now higher, but that's because he's already played his. He just played the Monday night game. So So it's interesting that you have these players that. You know, were kind of hyped a little bit, and in some ways, I think they were almost post-hype sleepers, right? That's the terminology. So Godwin, right? Cooper.
Godwin wasn't a post-hype sleeper. Godwin was about as hyped a sleeper as you could get.
Well, yes and no. I think there was a lot of people that expected a bigger breakout from him last year. Well, it did lull a little bit, and then it kind of came back for this year.
No, this year he was like the targeted mid-round receiver of every draft I've seen in every podcast. Like, oh, Chris Godwin, they cream themselves every time they started talking about Chris Godwin. he was a hype sleeper, not a post-hype sleeper.
Hype sleeper, okay, that's fair.
A post-hype sleeper is Kenny Galladay. I mean, people were kind of wondering what he was going to do this year. Maybe he was going to, break out a little more, and he kind of is, sort of, kind of. Michael Gallup is a post-type sleeper because people were high on him last year, like, oh, Michael Gallup, Cowboys, somebody's got to get the ball there. So Michael Gallup went late and towards the end of a lot of drafts last year, and now he's having the kind of year people thought he might have this year.
Right.
So that's a post-type sleeper to me.
Okay. I can get on board with that.
Post-type sleepers that have done well. Yeah.
Okay. All right. I see where you're going there. That's fine. Cooper's another one that, you know, perennially, I've had a lot of faith in Cooper. I've always thought he was a big talent, but just didn't run the right team. But you trade – it was something like if you look at his – now that he's played a full basically 16 games with the Cowboys, his full season stats with the Cowboys – over the past 16 games was like 1,500 yards, like 96 catches and like 12 touchdowns. So I mean, that's a top five receiver any given year.
Mm-hmm.
I think for me, the big surprise is DJ Chark.
Oh, for sure. Nobody saw this one coming.
I feel like a lot of it has to do with the fact that you had the injury to Foles right at the gate. And obviously, Chark spent a lot of time in backup form throwing with Gardner Minshew, so they had a connection there. So I'll be curious to see what happens, which it looks like they're targeting Nick Foles for week 11 mm-hmm. after their bye. So I'll be curious really to see what happens with him after that fact. If I'm Gelch, I'm looking to move Chark at as high a price as I possibly can at this point. He needs to do anything and everything he can to get back into it. I know he's been really hesitant to trade. I mean, what's interesting is that I tried to make trades with him through the first few weeks. I made offers for Cook. I even made him a hell of an offer for Eckler, where I took all the risk on Eckler the week before Gordon announced he was coming back. Mm-hmm. If he'd taken me up on that trade, my team would look way different, and I'd probably be fucked. But he didn't, because he's so gun shy right now, and I think that's hurting him. I think he believes, you know, he's got Cook and he's got Eckler and Gordon and he's got guys like Chark and Hopkins. I think he believes he can get back in it, and maybe that's true. But it's one of those things where, you know, the best thing you can do for your team, I think, at this point, is to sell high on a guy, give yourself some better depth, and then just try and shake things up. Even if you just trade for equivalent players across the board, whether it's a running back or wide receiver, change the makeup of your team, and I think you get different results. But that's just I think that's personally what you should do.
I don't think so. If I'm Gelch, I would hold stand pat, because you've just been unlucky. Your team has been, I mean, he should be, I don't know, at least 3-3, if not 4-2. In my mind, he's gotten some really bad luck. And to me, I think you just ride it out. You've got a good team. You don't change it. I don't think you change it just for the sake of changing it. There was one year in another league, where it was 2015 and I was 2-6 in a league.
Mm-hmm.
But I looked at my team and I'm like, I don't hate my team. I like my team. I think it's good. I've just been getting unlucky, and I ended up winning my last five matchups, sneaking into the playoffs, and then winning the title.
Hmm.
So sometimes if you believe in your team and you know it's good and you've just been getting unlucky, there's no harm in letting it ride and just hoping that it, you know, the luck adjusts. But, you know, unfortunately for him, he had, who got hurt on his team this week when he was facing Jake and finally gets somebody. Somebody that scores in the 80s against him, and he can't get out of the 80s, and you know, that's just again, bad luck continues. But I don't know that I would necessarily just make a deal to make a deal. So
I don't know. I mean, when I look at this team, I see a top heavy team, which is my problem. I mean, in terms of like what he's gone up against, yeah, he's like the fourth or fifth highest people amount of scored against him. But like you look at someone like you, right, where you've had way more points scored, you scored less. You've got Tim, who's had even way more points scored against him. Only about 10 points a game less has he scored, but he's still only got one more win to show for it, and he's got that tie with Tim. So I guess it's just for me, you know, you got to do something to shake things up. I could have kept my team. And I theoretically had every reason to keep my team the way it was because I was at 5-0, but I just felt like I needed something to keep my momentum going forward. And for me, that was that trade with you. For him, he's got basically a shit show for a quarterback situation. So I'm assuming he's going to go after somebody this week. And as far as everything else, I mean, yeah, Cook's great. Eckler has been devalued. Hopkins is not doing what you want him to do. Chark's been good. He's starting Auden Tate.
Yeah,
Disley's gone. James White is an up and down guy.
The Eckler Gordon situation, I guess if there's one thing, yeah, that would be it, because that dynamic is not helping him.
The rest of his team is meh. I mean, he's got a high variance guy in Mecole Hardman, Goodwin, Darrell Williams, Chris Herndon, who I assume now will take over for Will Disley, You know, he's got really nothing in terms of depth. And so, again, we're going into bye week situation where every single one of his guys, I'm just pulling up a schedule real quick. Yeah, all of his guys, let's see here, find bye. Yeah, I mean, basically, he's had none of his byes happen. All of his byes are in front of him. Hopkins and Chark have the same week 10 bye, so does James White. Week 9, he's pretty much okay. Week 8, he's okay. Week 11, he's got a couple guys on bye. So, I mean, yeah, week 12, he's got Cook and Eckler on bye. So it's just, you know,
Gordon on bye as well.
And Gordon on bye, right? So weeks 10 and week 12 especially. Week 10, he's got no wide receivers. Got no running backs.
We all know you want to revel in Gelch's misfortune, so.
I'm just saying, I think he needs to mix things up. He can do what he wants. It's his team. Last year, he said he made a trade too early, and it backfired, and he's gun-shy now of it. I think he's gone to the opposite side of the spectrum now, where I think he believes in his team too much. I think he needs to shake things up. And especially when you look at the bye weeks, he's got to make it. I mean, who the hell is he going to start at running back week 12? He's only got one capable running back to start right now in James White. In week 10, he's only got...
We're a month away. We're
a month away from that.
2 weeks away that. So
just saying.
Things can change. We'll see.
All right. I mean, I think that's it for me. There's not a ton of stuff on the watch list, in free agency. There's a couple moves that we made. I think people are going to start looking at, starting to fill out their bye week stuff. But you know, there's not a lot there.
Been a fairly uneventful year on the waiver wire outside of week one. It really hasn't been much.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, McLaurin's been the pickup of the year, I think.
McLaurin, and that's been about it.
Yeah.
Has there been any other waiver, at least in our league, any other waiver wire ad that's had as big an impact? I don't think so.
Yeah.
Disley, I guess, maybe. But now he got hurt.
Yeah.
But he got hurt, so I don't know. Yeah, it's been tough going on the waiver wire this year.
Yeah, which, you know,
not a lot of help.
Which is part of it, right? And in previous years, there's always been a handful of guys that were grabbed off of waivers at different points. You know, and it's like, you know, you look at the Saquon injury, right? Saquon happens, group spends all their money on what ends up being a 1 week, 2 week, 1 week, 2 week rental for Gallman, and then he gets hurt, and now Saquon's going to be back. So it's like they spent all that money on basically nothing. And I don't know if that Gallman player, I don't know if Gallman ended up doing enough to actually help them propel them to a win. What's interesting for them is they've scored the exact same amount within half a point of how much has been scored against them. Yet they're, 3-3?
Yeah.
So, you know, they are the definition of 500 right now.
Exactly.
Which I would say your hex is working then.
No, I wouldn't say so. They still have a shot at the playoffs. The hex is... truly tanked some teams in recent memory. I think of a couple. I think one time, I think Ryan got it. He ended up like 1-12 or something like that. Mm. And then there was Cat in the David Johnson year. So now to be truly hexed, that would be have to have a year like I have right now. So that's a hex year.
Okay,
they're doing fine.
Okay. All right. Well, I guess we'll see what happens. Lots going to happen in the next 7 weeks, and I don't know. Who knows? Maybe we'll have a completely different looking. You know, last year I think we, after like 4 weeks, we were like, "Oh wow, we definitely have like three playoff teams." And at this point, you know, I think
last year at this point in the season, it was very clear who the playoff teams were. A, who the playoff teams were, and B, who the title contenders were, and it pretty much played out that way the rest of the season.
Yeah, but right now this year we only know more muddled. Yeah, I would say we know playoff teams probably, but
we know. I think we safely know four playoff teams. I think the last two spots are up for grabs. Mostly, I was talking about that. I think after week three last year, I said after week three or four, we know the playoff teams already, and that turned out to be exactly right. I said there's one. I think there were like six teams that were 3-1. I said one of those teams is vulnerable, and it's Tim. And that was right, because he ended up losing his playoff spot. And then we knew that Joe and Joe had the best teams, and that was true the rest of the season. Mm-hmm. This year is just a lot more muddled.
Yep. So I guess we'll see what kind of clarity comes out in the next couple of weeks. But we'll call it there for the Chief and Chaz Power Half Hour. Any last thoughts for you tonight, Chief?
Nope, I'm all good.
All right, everybody. Thanks again for tuning in. We'll have this up as soon as we can. And we'll see you next time on the Chief and Chaz Power Half Hour.